joining us today, since we're talking about taxes. Essentially, we're talking about taxes on property. So we have Steve Hines with us from the Tax Committee, and he will be sitting in as our research expert to inform us as to what these are all about. We'll go ahead. We'll start with yours and then Laura's, but we will start with Mr. Hines. We have before us, ladies and gentlemen, three bills which would change to some extent the way we tax property, especially ag land, for debt service, for bonding referendums, etc. So these are essentially policy issues for taxes, but they are also issues that, if they were to pass, end up in the House Education Bill. So we are going to hear them and then refer them on to taxes, because I think this policy should be discussed in taxes before we would do anything. In any case, Mr. Hines is with us from House Research, and he will run through for you, and we've already passed out a sheet that he put together, this little piece right here, that will help you, I think, with this. But he will run through kind of what happens in these three bills, how they are alike and yet how they are each different. Unfortunately, they aren't alike, or we'd have only heard one of them. But as it is, they're all a little bit different, so we need to take a look at them. Sure. Mr. Hines, thank you so much for being here.
Madam Chairman, that's my pleasure. For the record, Steve Hines from House Research Department. And what I was going to briefly run through is, as the chairperson Sikora pointed out, this horizontally oriented sheet that says at the top, referendum market value and net tax capacity. And I apologize, this was put together somewhat hurriedly, but there are two tax bases that are used right now for property taxes in Minnesota. And those are the names for them: referendum market value and net tax capacity. Arguably, there's a third tax base, which is the tax base for the state property tax, and I can talk about that, but I did not put that on the sheet. But certainly questions about that, I'd be glad to answer as well. But referendum market value is the tax base that's used right now for school operating referenda and for county and city referenda, although there really are not many referenda levies for counties and cities. So almost all of the tax that's spread in the state on referendum market value is the school operating referenda tax base, is through the school operating referendas. The other tax base, which is the one we sometimes call the normal tax base, the regular tax base, is net tax capacity. And that one is the one who's described on the right-hand side of the page. So that's used for everything else, for debt levies and all other school levies, and for all county, city, town, and special district levies, except for these fairly minor role of the county and city referenda levies. And in each case, I've just highlighted the five major sort of types of property or classifications of property, and of course there are many more if you get into the minor details, but I think this summarizes pretty much the relevant ones, especially for this discussion. So ag land, residential homesteads, apartments, cabins, and commercial industrial property. And the two columns show you what each, under each tax base, what that type of property's contribution to the tax base is. It's not important that the numbers on the left-hand column are like 100% versus on the right-hand column they're at 1%, because it's only the question about each kind of property type's tax capacity or contribution to the tax base relative to the other property types. So on referendum market value, for instance, we see that homes, apartments, and commercial industrial are all on at 100%. A dollar of home value is the same as a dollar of apartment value or a dollar of commercial industrial value in terms of the tax base. Ag land and cabins have no contribution to the referendum market value. They pay any tax that's on referendum market value, those types of property would be exempt from. on the current law, on the right-hand side, the net tax capacity tax, ag land, I show two rates there. There's a rate for the first 600,000 of an ag homestead is at the lower rate. The value over 600,000 in non-homestead ag land is at the higher 1% rate. Homes are at the 1% rate. There is actually a 1.25% rate, but it's only over 500,000, so it's not a hugely important factor in this discussion. Apartments are 1.25%, cabins 1%, the same as homes. And then commercial industrial, again, two percentages are shown. The 1.5% applies to the first 150,000 of value, and the 2% is on the value over $150,000. So with that being said, each of these three bills you're considering today proposes that school debt levies would be spread on some variations of the tax bases that we've just that are currently at work. House File 1412 proposes that again school debt levies be spread under net tax capacity as they are now, except it defines net tax capacity slightly differently. And the only difference is that ag land is at 0%. So basically it says we'll use the net tax capacity except ag land will be exempt. That's the only change from the current way that school debt levies are spread under House File 1412. House File 1413 allows the school board the option of having the levy fall under either the referendum market value or the net tax capacity. And if you look at the sheet, in both cases there are no changes to the two existing, so it's just the referendum market value that we now know, the net tax capacity that we now know, and just allows the board to propose that the school debt issue be spread under either or, whereas now it would only be under net tax capacity. And then finally, House File 1414 again provides an option to the board. But in this case, the one option is net tax capacity under current law, the same as we have now. But the other option would be a referendum market value, but redefined so that, again, ag land would be at zero, but it does put cabins back in. Currently, cabins are not in in the definition of referendum market value. Cabins would be back in for school debt only now. This would not put them back in for a school referendum, but it would be a new tax base just for school debt. Or, and commercial industrial now is at a rate of 150%. So instead of a dollar of commercial industrial paying the same as a value as a dollar of homes, it would pay $1.50, which is less than the proportion on the net tax capacity, but more than on referendum market value. So I hope this helps a little as you're hearing the bills, and I'd be glad to answer questions.
We might have a few for you, Mr. Hines. Thank you so much. This little sheet is very, very helpful compared to just reading a bill and trying to figure out what it is. Mm-hmm. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hines, when I'm looking at referendum market value or net tax capacity, you've got the percentages in there. What's the base starting point in terms of the value of the land that we're talking about? Is it assessor's estimated market value? Is it fair market value or something else?
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chairman, Representative Newman, the basis for it would be estimated market value or really limited market value in the case of properties that are subject to limited market value, which would be the ag land, res homesteads, and the cabins in these examples. So it is the notion of the, you know, for commercial, industrial, and apartments, it's whatever the assessor places a value on. And for the other types, it's what value the assessor thinks it is, subject to the limits of the limited market value laws.
Are there any questions at the moment? Otherwise, we will proceed with House File 1412 and then, kind of listen to the testimony about all three of them and decide then if there are any of these we would like to send on to Tax Committee, if we want to send all three, etc. So, Representative Demmer, would you please talk about your bill?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you want me to move the bill now?
Please.
Okay, Madam Chair, I would I move House File 1412, and I believe it's for passage and re-referral to tax committee.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill, along with the other two bills in front of us, deal with a basic concept of taxation on farmland for the purposes of Sewell referendums. I think it was 4 years ago, before my time, when the operating referendum was removed from farmland as a whole, and just farmers were taxed only on their home, and I believe 1.5 acres around their home. It was a significant change made in the to go to what was called the referendum market value. We're simply taking that concept and extending it also to the debt service referendum now. And the reason for that probably is redundant for those of you who were here 4 years ago in terms of this whole argument about whether or not farmland should be included for purposes of referenda. As we see the values of farmland escalating for non-productive reasons, speculation, if you will, 1031 exchange, we've seen those sorts of things. The fixed cost of farming and running those farms is going up. That has no relationship whatsoever to the productive capacity. And as the fixed cost goes up, it makes it more and more difficult. Farmers are not able to change their pricing. They can't make any adjustments to their product mix in terms of adding different inventory items like you can in a commercial business. Can't try to tweak gross profit margins by increasing prices and that sort of thing. You're a market taker as opposed to a market maker. And so I would submit that in fairness, and in it's very appropriate that we look at removing, and also for the benefit of trying to pass a referendum out in the rural areas especially, removing the farmland from debt referendums also, like we do with operating referendums. Again, farmers are still paying their share. They're paying on their house and an acre just like the homeowners do. And basically what this would do is take a referendum that a particular school district would have and rearrange where that would be paid to the combination, as you see in the chart that Mr. Hines put together for us, rearrange where that would go to all homeowners, including farmers, as well as commercial and of course, depending on which bill we do, apartments and cabins also. So with that, Madam Chair, that's kind of the central issue here. And with that, Madam Chair, I guess I can stand for questions. We can talk about issues.
Does anybody, Representative Nesso?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer, I just want to make sure that I've got this all correct. If House File 1412 were to pass, my understanding is that as a debt levy or other school levy was proceeding, that then a larger portion of that would be paid by the other four categories in order to replace the money that would no longer be paid off the ag land. Have I got that? Is that essentially the trade-off? We're just reshuffling the dollar amount. The total dollar amount ends up the same. It just gets paid in different proportions, and the others all pay some amount more to make up for the ag land. Is that correct?
Representative Dammer.
Madam Chair, Representative Meslow, that is correct. Keep in mind, it's not quite the same as saying instead of four people paying, it's now three people paying. That's not quite accurate. It's still four people paying, but the shift in the market value has made it so that the four are now paying a different amount. And of course, the fourth person being the farmer, he is paying less. The other three are paying more. It's redistributing that load.
I think, Representative Meslow, we might add that depending on the property values in the area, some of that might be shifted to the state to pay more aid. Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could, we do have someone here to testify also. Is this an appropriate time to listen to that testimony?
Sure, if it's on your bill, Representative Gemma. Yes.
Okay.
And in the meantime, while he's coming up, Representative Biskins has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer, would the farmer then pay on the home and 1 acre? Is that the idea?
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Would you introduce yourself, please, sir?
I'm Al Christofferson. I'm president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau and also a farmer from Kanduck County.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Christofferson. Please go ahead.
Thank you. We certainly thank you, Chairman Sikora, and the committee for the opportunity to share my comments here today. There are 78 organized county farm bureaus throughout Minnesota, and farm bureau members from those counties meet annually to establish our policy for the ensuing year. Certainly, property taxes over the years have probably generated more of the discussion amongst our annual meeting than any other issue, but they do have certainly a very strong impact on our farming operations, and this issue has been a priority of ours for a number of years, and it continues to be so. Our Farm Bureau public policy states that we support adequate and uniform school funding. Education funding relying on a combination of income, sales, and property taxes on house, garage, and 1 acre. Local school district capital or debt service levies being removed from ag land and being based on the house and the garage and 1 acre. We really believe this is an issue of tax equity and tax fairness. School funding is a critical issue, and we support our schools being adequately funded, as our policy says. However, the current system in regards to debt service levy is not fair or equitable and forces farmers to pay a larger share of the property tax burden to pay for construction of school buildings more so than our neighbors who live in town. We are here today in support of the concept contained in all three of the bills before you that will potentially exempt ag land from debt service levies. This will put farmers on what we feel, at least, is a more even footing with other property taxpayers and school districts. Perhaps the most important part of my comments here, though, are the following paragraph, and I want to make that extremely clear, and that is that we are not here asking for a complete exemption of debt service levies. As I stated earlier, Farm Bureau policy supports local school district capital or debt service levies being removed from ag land and being based on the house, garage, and 1 acre. We are fully and totally committed to shouldering our share of the cost of construction of school buildings equally with other taxpayers in the school districts throughout Minnesota, and that is extremely important. We are fully in support of carrying our share with regard to any capital improvements or construction of school buildings, etc. The 2001 legislature took the first step in the house, garage, and 1 acre direction by exempting ag land from local school operating levies. We urge the committee to act favorable on these concepts contained in the bills before you and continue us further into the direction of the house and the garage and 1 acre. Thank you very much for the opportunity and would respond to any questions if there are. Thank you.
Representative Biscons.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question has to do with if there is any form of means testing that goes on here, because one's got to think, and I know some very large, very, very successful farm operations, and yet, almost sounds like a tax cut for the wealthy, I'm just curious as to if there is any sort of means test that goes into this process, or if it is simply, the whole operation is now off the tax rolls except for the house, garage, and 1 acre.
Mr. Christofferson, do you wish to respond to that?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, Representative, I guess we're talking about concepts here, and obviously the bills, I suspect they are going to address that, perhaps, I'm not sure, but certainly we are looking at it from an organization standpoint. We are looking at it of equity in terms of let us, as farmers, pay for these items based upon, yes, I suppose the value of our house then and the garage and the 1 acre as it would for someone who has property in town, etc., but excluding the farmland.
Representative Gibson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess then the real question is, you know, is the farm a business or is it not? All right, because it sounds like we want to treat the farm as a residence, which I think is appropriate. All right, but some would also argue, particularly in this day and age, that for any farm to be successful, it has to be run just like a business. And so, you know, I think of the person who might have an apartment up above their pharmacy, all right, should that pharmacy slash apartment be taxed at a residential rate, or should it be taxed at a commercial industrial rate? And so, I do understand it's a concept, and it'll be something to be worked out as it moves forward. But that's just my, you know, initial question that I have as it moves forward.
Representative Cameron.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick response to Representative Biskins. I would agree with you, and also put an asterisk by it. Yes, a farm is a business. There's no question about that. What we have, though, is we have a situation where evaluations of farmland, for whatever reasons, are getting out of whack. We don't have commercial entities, if you will, escalating in value for reasons other than their productive capacity. You know, there are very few people buying businesses because you're going to have development on there that's going to make you sell it by the square foot instead of by the acre like we do in farmland. And so I would argue that because of that purpose, our values are getting out of the productive capacity of what the land is. And there might even be another answer than what we're talking about here, but that would be the major difference distinction I would make, Representative Biskins. Madam Chair, if we could, we do have a couple other people here to testify, and as long as we're going to be, I know we've got, they're actually here with Representative Broad for her bill, but I think in the interest of just kind of keeping things packaged and neat, should we have them come on now also and do their testifying?
Yes, why don't you have them come down, and then probably Representative Broad, I'll move your bill later, but perhaps you could explain yours. And you've got two of them, so should we take 14, 13? Should we go in order here? Obviously, you folks put these in as a package, so we're looking at them as a package.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do think that what we did put before you today is a number of options, or a menu, if you will, of different things that we can do to start moving in the direction of solving some of the problems that we're finding in our rural communities in regards to the taxation of ag land for bond referendum. So we did do that intentionally. A lot of it is in regards to discussion. This is a big change. It's an important issue that we're discussing here today. It's important to all of us, whether we own a farm or not. It's important to all of us because of the system that we have in place. So we thought it was well worth our time in discussion to talk about options, as opposed to bringing forward one bill and saying, this is the way it's got to be, or this is the right thing. I think both Representative Demmer and I agree that the changes that we are offering here today, or the options that we put forward here today, will impact different areas of the state very differently. And that's why I think that we've decided to bring forward a variety of options. But, Madam Chair and members, I do have here to testify on Representative Demmer's bill as well, Dan Morris and Dan Melkert from Waterville. And these two gentlemen have been very persistent and very in tune to the impacts of bond levy referendum on farmland, and they are the guys who contacted me and wanted to really talk to me about how farmland is taxed in the state of Minnesota and how it impacts and is impacted by a school bond referendum in our communities. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to hear from those two folks.
Representative Broad, in general, what percent, if we were to shift the farmers who are now paying on their ag land, if we were to shift that totally to the residential and commercial property in the community, that's what would be left, right? About what percent of the cost of the debt would be shifted to them?
Well, Madam Chair, that would really, I appreciate and understand the question. It would really depend on the tax capacity or the makeup of the land within that specific district, which is why you have before you some of the alternatives that I've put forward in 1413 and 1414, which give a school district an option to say, this is how, this is the best way for our tax capacity. This is the best way of taxing for our tax capacity. It may not be the best way for somebody else in this part of the state or this part of the state based on their the makeup of their tax capacity. That's part of the reason for the alternatives that we have before you, Madam Chair, because it does impact districts, and I couldn't give you one number. Mr. Hines, is that your assessment, or maybe you have a different view?
Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I would concur with you exactly. It would vary so much by district that it would be, I don't know if a generalization would be worthwhile at this point. We could look at if you took all the existing debt levies off of ag to see where it would shift to, would tell us something, but I'm not even sure what that would tell us, because this proposal would only be for going forward, et cetera. But if in the process of deliberating about these proposals, if that seems like a worthwhile exercise, we could do that. And obviously we can do runs on individual districts, but the effect would be very different. And especially with 1412, when there's aid that comes into the picture, it's not completely shifted. So that is a further complication.
I guess as we're talking here, what I'm thinking is, you know, right now one of the main interests in this is because it's difficult to pass bond referendums when it goes on the farmland, because the farmers are paying so much an acre for that debt service. On the other hand, will it become just as hard to pass them because all the people in the little shops and homes in the community would realize that they are then going to be paying the majority of that? So I'm just wondering, you know, long term what the effects are, which is why I guess the tax committee will get to make this decision.
Right. And Madam Chair, those are absolutely excellent questions, and the impact of the shifts are important things to know as you move forward and as we move forward. And under the bill that the option bill, as a school district would move forward in making that determination. But I would have to say that in regards to the shifts, it's also shifting it back onto the homestead portion of the farm as well. So the farmers aren't getting off scot-free. They're going to pay the same as other similarly valued properties without farmland, but it's a fair statement.
Why don't we take the testimony from the two gentlemen first, and please, each of you, would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Malkert. I'm a farmer in the Waterville, Elysian, Morristown School District.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and go ahead.
Hey, Madam Chair, my name is Dan Morris. I'm also a farmer in the Waterville, Elysian, Morristown School District. I'm a supervisor from Morristown Township also, so we've been looking at taxes for quite a while, and I served on a facility committee when Waterville Elysian was thinking of building, and so that's why I brought this to Laura's attention, because I realized how it would impact us.
All right, which of you wants to run with it first?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sir.
I guess, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I will. We put together kind of a pamphlet that should have been passed out to you. It started about 2 years ago when the school district decided to build a new school. And it kind of shows everything that we've done in line. The first page is a letter that I wrote to Tom explaining what was happening and the dollar figures that were going to affect the farmer. We also then went out, the consecutive pages are shown from the townships in the Waterville School District, which all of them had signed in support of this letter. Within the letter, it shows the difference of what the farmer would actually be paying in taxes. with a $22.2 million, and you got to keep in mind that this is a year ago, that you can't build a school for 22, or the same school for $22 million, you can't get the same interest rate, and our property taxes, the estimated value, have actually, believe it or not, doubled since then. We had, or the school had, Ehlers Associates do a tax analysis for them. And in this, after they had gotten finished with their review, I had asked them to do a 640-acre farm. Now, 640 acres may seem big to some, may seem not big to others, but it's the tax on this 640 acres is not whether you own the land. It also includes if you own 100 and you rent the other 540 acres. Because if the taxes go up on the rented land, it's going to be passed on down to the farmer that runs it. Mm-hmm. Within their analysis on the 640 acres, the first year, the tax increase just because of the school was going to be $4,632. For increase of a house at $125,000 to $150,000 in town was going to be increased $350. This is just due to the referendum. We then also went a little bit further and we said, well, how can we continue this on? Because, okay, so $4,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money, but when you add over a 20-year period, what is the figure? So I had them do an analysis on that, and that is the one that folds out the extra long sheet. And this is actually, the numbers that I give you are not mine, but they are actually Ehlers. They did a projection for a 20-year period, 10% increase in the value across the board with a 12.5% over the whole base, and then they used a 4.85 interest rate. As you add all those figures up, the 640 acres for 20 years now all of a sudden comes up to $112,000 plus, whereas the house in town with the increase of $350 a year would come out to about $8,000 to $10,000, maybe possibly $12,000. So there's a very wide spread in there. I guess I'm saying a lot. I guess I'll hand it over to you.
Mr. Morris.
Thank you, madam. If you go back to that long sheet and go to the next page, I worked more with the assessor, and that next page shows some of the 2003 ag sales. Now, these were true ag sales after the state came down to Rice County, and I just want to remind you that this is Rice County that I got this from, because that's where we live. I didn't check with other counties or whatever. But ag sales on there, like the previous people have spoke, have been just going wild in our area because of 1031s or because of development. And they are no longer ag sales as ag. The following page is 2004 ag sales, and it shows there how they've gone up again. And Rice County raised the last 3 years now 15% on ag, and then the state came in and made them raise them another 10% because they couldn't keep up with all the sales, not due to ag sales, but to 1031s and being developed.
Mr. Morris, is this land being developed into homes and shopping centers and stuff like this?
Most of this land is being developed, subdivided off into houses. One per 20 acres, one per 40 acres, because you can buy land down there cheaper than what you can buy lots up here. The next page, this is the brand new, I just got this yesterday, 2005 ag sales. And if you look on there, on the right-hand side, it's per acre. They range from $6,000 an acre. Another sale was $4,300 an acre. They've got an ag sale in there of $16,000, $447 per acre. These are all ag sales according to the state man that have to be used to change our estimated market values. And the median on the bottom, the assessor, that's how our ag, that's what our ag land is today, and so he's going to have to raise that another 12 to 15% just to get into that 95 to 97% range, because the state makes them stay between 90 and 100%. The following page is, it's got Rice County 2004 agricultural assessments on it, and in Rice County right now, I'd like you to look at the bottom. In the year 2000, 100% CER ground had an ag value of $2,875, and in 2004 it had $5,265, and now in 2005 we're going to go up 12% or more. That just goes to show what's happened in the last 4 years to our ag ground. The next page is what houses in Morristown, because that's exactly where I live, have done. There was 18 sales in Morristown this last year, and of them 18, there were 5 brand new homes that were sold, so it carries pretty close to a yearly sale, the assessor said. And in Morristown, the average house is sitting at $108,000. Compared to the ag ground sitting at right around $59,000 to $6,000. The last page, it kind of relates to what Elliers and Associates did again. I sat on that committee, and a $21 million school way on the right hand side, $125,000 home would have been paying $373 a year. On the bottom, a $2,000 per acre estimated market, and if you had 320 acres, they'd have been paying, quote, $1,910 a year, which is $597 an acre. But since this is put out, $2,000 an acre isn't $2,000, it's $6,000 now, and so that $21 million school today would probably cost, for a farmer, 3 times what that $5.97 is. So, with that, I'd entertain any questions if there are.
I can definitely relate to what's going on because I see the same thing happening in the area that I happen to live in. It's all, you know, lakeshore or close by, just kind of like being developed and close by. Same thing is happening to that property, so I can fully understand what you're going through. We had one more person who wished to testify on this bill, I believe. Is that correct?
Madam Chair.
Representative Broad.
Thank you. Thank you. I do have, you know, when I talk about the menu, there are other viewpoints, obviously, out there. And both Dan Morris and Dan Melkert have been working very diligently and working very strongly with the school board as well as the superintendent in trying to come to some agreement in terms of how do we do this? If it's fair for to have ag land off operating referendum, why doesn't the policy hold? Why doesn't the policy come forward for bond referendum as well? But part of the way that we're bringing the bill forward, which, Madam Chair, I appreciate very much how you're doing this. I do recognize it's not standard and rather a little bit awkward, but I do have also here today Superintendent Joel Whitehurst and School Board Member Leonard Pedersen, and they can maybe tell you a little bit about their discussions on a little bit different perspective, which has brought us to Bill Number 1414, I believe, which is the alternative form. I call it the hybrid approach, Madam Chair, in terms of the market value and tax capacity. So if they could come down and maybe have just a few comments, we can get to your questions.
All right, Superintendent Whitehurst.
Mm-hmm.
There are extra chairs here if somebody wants to drag one up.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
My name is Joel Whitehurst. I'm the superintendent of schools of Waterville, Legion, Morristown. I was asked for it.
And I'm Leonard Pedersen. I'm on the school board, and I'm also the treasurer of the school district.
Thank you.
And I guess I view our purpose here today is to talk about the reality of what happens at the district level when these issues come forward. As Dan and Dan had alluded earlier, we did have a building bond for $23 million that was put to vote in December of 2003. And to be honest, it was pummeled. We had 70% of the people vote against it, 30% vote for it. So what we did afterwards is we conducted something that we called an autopsy survey. We had somebody come in, take a look, tell us, you know, what went drastically wrong. Was it the plan? Was it how we presented it? You know, what were the major factors that were driving the people to vote no on the building bond? And two pieces really stand out in my mind. One of the questions was, if you were the superintendent of the district, what would you do? 72% of the respondents said they would come back again with some form of building bond, whether it be renovation and whether it would be new construction. The other piece that came out of it said, do not go to the general public unless you change the taxation system and how it works with the farmers. We're a tremendously ag, our net tax capacity, if you will, is more ag than residential. We don't have a large number of businesses. We do have a large number of seasonal rec. That's where my perspective, and this is strictly my opinion, is I'm more in favor of the alternate one, where we do look at, I consider school facilities being a quality of life issue, where if you have newer buildings, your tax base should increase. The people who own some of those residential properties on the lake should have some obligation to pay, whereas our operating referendum is something different, where you're paying for the current the students that are currently going through the system. For me, I like it because it's still an option. The local school board will come back. They make the decision whether they want to go on true net tax capacity or this modified market value system. So, in essence, it still rotates back to the residents of the district. They're the ones who ultimately make the decision. And by having the option, if it doesn't work, you know, we can come back and reload and try again. You know, we are a district of 1,000 students. We currently do not have any debt service. All of our buildings are paid for. But we do have issues with the fire marshal, roofs, tuck pointing, you know, you name it, we have it. And our residents understand that. They understand, as I said before, with the 72% saying we need to do something, that we do have issues with our facilities. And they're also telling me that they would support whatever it is that we would propose if we could take a look at something different for the taxation and level it out. You know, I guess the last piece that I would like to correlate with this is because we are such an ag-related area, people may live in town, but they still have relatives out in the farm. You know, mom and dad moved to town, the son took over the farm. Cousin lives in town, some other family member runs the farm. So there is the connect between the two. So there is an understanding between the residential community and our ag community as we go forward. Even to take it a step further, the school board understands this issue. We did pass a resolution at our last regular school board meeting supporting this particular taxation system as an option for our district, and I realize that you're not the decision-making body today, but I certainly appreciate you allowing us to provide input.
Mr. Pearson.
Yes, the only thing I might add is that the schools add a value to a community, not only to the people, but also to the market value of the community. Now, it's not impossible to envision that someone would move in and want to be a farmer because of the value of the schools, but the reality is in most instances when a community is being evaluated by people to come in, it's being evaluated relative to either a business or a residential. I'm going to buy a home there, I'm going to buy a home on the lake, I'm going to start a business, or I'm going to buy a business. How are the schools? And therefore, it is not illogical to myself and also the members of the school board that, in fact, the farmer should be treated just like a residential owner, and in the fact that the majority of the load should be not only on the business but also on the residential and also on the recreational property owners.
All right, are there any questions for these gentlemen? Representative Biskins. Okay. Are there any questions for these gentlemen specifically? Representative Dorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the testimony and the problem that you are challenged with, that we're all challenged with. And my question is, did you ever entertain a scenario where you would reduce those proportions on the ag land and the amount of acreage that would be covered? In other words, when I look at the proposals, it seems like they stay with the current mix of the 0.55% and then the 1%, or shift to a zero. Did you talk about just what would happen if you kept some variation there but changed the mix in terms of all the rapid changes that have happened to land values?
Yes, we have. We've also been working on the... Oh, sorry.
No problem.
We've also worked on the Senate side. We've been working with Tom Neville, and some of his research people did run some numbers for us as a mix with this alternate plan and comparing it directly to net tax capacity and market value. And it does come up in a meld somewhere in the middle for those parcels of property. I think the key here also being when you go back and it goes on the house to garage in 1 acre, taking the same increase in responsibility as a residential in the city. Obviously, we didn't go too far in depth to it because we don't have a dollar amount, we don't have an exacting project, and just out of fear, you know, locally that we're looking at, now the school is looking at doing this, we didn't pursue it there.
Okay. Representative Broad, did you?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just quickly address that as well, Representative Dorn. Part of the reason for bringing it forward the way in which we did is that we were trying not to create another different tax calculation, I guess mm-hmm. I'll say, in regards to you're going to calculate this way, and create a calculation similar to our school calculation scares me a little bit, Madam Chair, in regards to the amount of math problems and math computations I would have to make. So it was just an attempt to work within the parameters of our current tax structure and not create additional work for our county assessors and the counties as well. So it's not something certainly something that we can talk about as part of the discussion. I also look at it as going back to the operating levy and a fairness issue. And I think these two gentlemen spoke to that issue in regards to the value that's added to a community. People aren't coming in to buy farmland in a community because of the schools, but they add value because they're bringing kids into the schools. So, you know, I think that there's some discussion we can have, but part of it was just simplicity.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Broad, I didn't realize assessors were overworked. Madam Chair, I got a question for Mr. Crow.
Mr. Crow,
as I think of a discussion we had maybe a week or so ago, you talked about our targets and how we have to think of things as both we have to think of both the aid and the levy components, all right? As I look at these bills in front of us, there seems to be some shifting around in aid and levy, but as far as the big picture is concerned, all right, do all of these fit within what we would consider whatever our target is going to be without any change in the global number?
Yep.
We don't know our target.
Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, the 1412 has clearly moves money between aid and levy because districts will become more property poor because there will be less tax base. So there will be more aid, equalization aid paid out, but on the other hand, some levy savings as well. House Bill 1413 and 1414 both calculate the aid in the same way, basically, as on the current tax base, and then they make the adjustments after that, so that all that happens, so that there is no change in equalization aid paid by the state, but there is a change within the district as to who pays the property tax levy.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cole, obviously, I guess one of the reasons why these proposals are in front of us is because in some areas, for fairness reasons, some referenda just can't get passed, all right? And so the purpose, then, I would assume, would be to make it easier for referenda to pass. Would that be figured in by the Department of Finance as any of these bills are moved forward to say, hey, while we're looking at really shifts in aid and levy, we also need to calculate in the potential of more referenda passing, therefore more state spending occurring?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, the only fiscal note that's completed is on 1414, and there is an assumption built in there that there won't be additional levies passed. And I think part of the reason for that is that, just as I said, you're calculating the aid based on current law tax base in 13 and 14, and so because you're shifting burden and not providing additional equalization aid, there are going to be some taxpayers that actually end up with a greater burden because of the passage of these two bills. So there's sort of an offsetting behavioral effect that may be occurring as well with homeowners potentially not being as supportive if their burden is increased significantly. And so it's not clear, it's not a slam dunk that passage of these, the 13 and 14, would necessarily generate any additional referendums. I think it's an open question on 12 and something that we'll have to look into when we get a fiscal note on it, or if we, whatever point that comes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, can I just
address that?
I'll just quickly address that. Fairness and openness discussion that we're having here today, there may be some other impacts on the state that we'll talk about in tax committee. When you look at the property tax refund, there probably is some connection that will occur as some shifts do occur to homeowners. More homeowners may be eligible for property tax refund payments from the state. So that is something that we'll be looking at, and that's another interaction, if you will, between the state government and homeowners, aside from the impacts that we're discussing here today between the state and the districts themselves.
Representative Demmer, we still have two more people who wish to testify, by the way, so.
Okay, Madam Chair, just real quickly, in the spirit of Representative Broad and full disclosure, I think another thing to take into consideration as we look at equalization and the fact that our property values are going up and the equalization thresholds are not changing, we have more and more districts getting out of the realm of equalization. So if we do some of this sort of thing, again, in the interest of openness, if we do lower our tax bases, we might actually bring more equalization into play again, because we have districts going out of the realm of equalization as their thresholds are stayed the same. If we lower property values, we might bring some more in, so that'd be something else to consider. But it's all
mixed. Ethan, you did have a question. And sure? Okay. All right, there are two other people who had requested an opportunity to testify. Ms. Hasbargen and Mr. Lundell, would you both come down, please? And members, we are going to try and close this down about 10 to 2. You know, there's a little service over in the Capitol Steps at 2 o'clock due to the Red Lake tragedy yesterday. So I want to make sure that we are able to go to that. Ms. Hasbargen, oh, sure. In a little bit. We only have, in the interest of cost cutting, we have been living with one page instead of two. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, Renee Huff, partner with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. I want to thank Representative Demmer and Representative Broad for bringing these bills forward. I think it is a very important discussion that we're having today, and they are certainly trying to solve a problem. And this problem is not isolated just in these school districts, but we can look all over the state for similar stories. But what I would like to try to do today is put it in a statewide perspective and ask some statewide policy questions. And before I do so on behalf of MREA, I just want to say that I, too, am a farmer. In fact, I see some people in the room here who lobby for my husband especially. And so this is definitely an issue that I understand and sort of on a visceral level have been learning from today. But I'm also here on behalf of the MREA, which is a coalition of 150 school districts in greater Minnesota. And the MREA has no formal position on this bill at this time. But we do have three questions we'd like to focus your discussion on. The first question is, what should land pay for? And in 2001, when we did the big tax reform, we said land will no longer pay for the basic education. Land will no longer pay for operating levies, but land will pay for school buildings. But then, by the time we got to 2003, because of the state budget crises and some other issues, we had to, in that budget, do a little bit of a shifting, and there were a number of formulas that were all aid at that time, training and experience, equity formula, some of those kinds of things. And they started to become aid and levy. And those levies started to go back on net tax capacity. So starting in the last budget that you did 2 years ago, you started putting some education spending back on ag land. And in this governor's proposal, it takes it even a step further because the discretionary levy is on net tax capacity. So while we're having this discussion in this room today about taking ag land off of debt service levy, we are really putting it on ag land if we go ahead with that discretionary levy of $150 a pupil. So I just want to lay out that having the discussion of what should ag land pay for is a relevant and important discussion because it's happening other places in the education budget. The second question we would like to have an answer to is, what is the most fair policy for rural students? And I have just passed out a sheet that looks like this. Don't bother to read the text of that sheet. Just look at the pictures, especially the bottom graph, because that simply shows you what the tax bases were like before the 2001 reform and then what they are like after the reform. Now, this is a referendum market value tax base that we're looking at right here. And the black is before. The red is after. And I want you to look at, we have a state average figure, an out-state average, a smallest school district average, and then a metro average. The point I want to make is, before the reform, our smallest schools in rural Minnesota, smallest school districts, had a tax base that was on par per student with those in the metro area. But when we removed ag land and cabins from that tax base, we lowered that the buying power for rural students by well over half in those smallest districts. We lowered it by a third on average in outstate Minnesota. And that brings some very important questions to the floor about how we're going to fill that differential. And what I want to show you is that before the tax reform, metro students had a tax base that is almost equal to the tax base they emerged from the tax reform from. So this year, as we look at the governor's bill that is using, are really counting on levies to carry us into the future, you can see that we no longer now are on an equitable playing ground in that respect. And so how does that play out? I'd just like to refer you to the map that you've also been given, because the map shows you now what is happening. We went from a Minnesota miracle where every taxpayer and every student received, every taxpayer paid about the same rate for their basic education services in their school district, and then every student received the same dollar amount guaranteed by the state from that property tax levy. Well, now what's happened since 2001 is we have a gap between the haves and the have-nots, which is widening.
And Ms. Hasparvin?
Yes.
We're going to run out of time. Could you kind of get to the point of the three different bills and maybe...
Yes, I will. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank
you. I'll just make one other point. The other graph on that previous page is simply to show you that the smaller the school district, the more ag land in it. And as I was interested in seeing the Waterville School District in terms of its mix of property. They are 54% homestead, 27% ag. Some of those smallest districts in Minnesota were 85, 90% ag. So that's sort of the kind of impact that particular issue has. Third point, how much should the state spend? Let me just show you a picture that Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom created for you earlier in the year, and it has to do with debt service equalization. And you can see that every year since 1997 to 2009, we are spending more and more and more to build schools in Minnesota. That's those bars are growing. But the black is the amount of equalization aid that's going toward those buildings. And as you can see, and as Representative Demmer pointed out to you a minute ago, that is declining, or it is getting to be less and less and less as we go forward because of the increased property value and because of the fact that the equalization factor is fixed and not variable. So if you're going to take ag land off, you have got to be prepared to spend a lot more money in equalization aid, or you have created a two-tier system which is going to be immensely unfair to students in some communities compared to others. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell, Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. I'm not a farmer, but I grew up on a farm. Schools for Equity and Education has no official position, but we're very simple on these bills, but we're very, very sympathetic with the ideas that have been presented here today. The property tax needs to be part of the part of how schools are funded, but we always want it to be funded and that property tax be applied in a very fair way, or the fairest way possible. And I think that the questions or the discussion around agricultural land here were values fluctuate wildly with no relation to income or commodity prices is something that I think really deserves further discussion. So we would support the further discussion of each of these bills as we move to the tax committee. I think that Ms. Hasparvin and Representative Broad, Representative Demmer have all talked about the debt service equalization program, and I think, again, having the factors expressed as constants instead of as percentages of a statewide average makes it very, very difficult. As I've been sat through many presentations by Ehlers and Associates, they show districts where the debt service equalization is, 30 to 40% in the first year, and 3-4 years later, there simply is no state aid left. Why is that? Because the state equalizing factor is expressed as a constant, and the growing property values simply phase that out. I think we need a comprehensive statewide facility strategy. I think that's going to include new constructions, include deferred maintenance. I think that tax base and discussion of which is the proper tax base is probably best served in that overall discussion, but it's certainly the problem that is existing right now is one that really needs to be looked at. Mm-hmm. I'm going to anticipate Representative Dreiling's question about what target should this be in. And about a decade ago, Schools for Equity and Education, we suggested to the legislature that they should form a joint subcommittee between taxes and education funding to talk about these types of programs and talk about which tax target should come out of, where it is more appropriately discussed and where, how it fits in the whole statewide policy, not only statewide education policy, but statewide tax policy. I think that sometimes there's a disconnect between what happens in this building and what happened in this room and what happened two floors up 2 hours ago. I think that, you know, to have some of those things discussed in a more public manner, and in a manner that's more cohesive with the movements in both the statewide tax policy and statewide education policy probably would make more sense. I want to thank both Representatives Broad and Representative Demmer for bringing this forward. We think it's a discussion that needs to continue to go on and probably grow into a wider discussion of what we're going to do with facilities, both new and repairing, and how we're going to move on with that with property tax-based equalization programs and the like. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Greiling has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wendell did answer my question, one of my questions, but one of the other thing I want to say, just because time is short, I would like to discuss this a lot more, is there's one statement, and I noticed this in the MREA newsletter as well, that isn't entirely accurate, and it's the first and only time I've ever found anything that in the newsletter that's not entirely accurate. But for the record, the statement where it says business property was retained so metro districts have the same revenue generating ability as before isn't accurate, because before the rate that, you know, based on the amount of commercial industrial, the rates, and I just got the exact numbers from Mr. Hines, were 2.4 and 3.4. So to go down to the one there was a huge hit for the metro ability to raise funds through levy referendums for districts like mine that have Rosedale. And that was to flatten it out so we all had just as much of a disadvantage of passing levy referendums as each other. And I would say that's the wrong direction. So when we get a chance to have this discussion, Madam Chair, I think to have the joint tax and education task force over the summer and look at this is something that would be fruitful. I would rather have us, though, fund education at the state level as we promised in 2001 and not have these kind of inequities that are real inequities that the people in the room are facing.
Madam Chair. But this is essentially not so much to discuss the level of state funding for ongoing operations. This is debt service and operating levies and those kinds of issues. So that's kind of two different things. Ms. Hasbargen, did you wish to?
Chair. Representative Greiling, I was simply referring to the tax base per pupil. In that respect, it was unchanged. But you are absolutely correct that when we lowered the classification rates for business property, especially in that referendum market value tax base, where a dollar of residential equals a dollar of business, you really didn't any longer have shelter. You weren't sheltering your homeowners from the cost of those levies, and that had a huge, huge impact on your district.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just quickly say, in listening to Ms. Hasbargen, she said that MREA has not taken a position on this legislation. I sure would hate to see it when you do, because I think I sensed a very strong position from your comments. So, Madam Chair, I guess I just wanted to state that for the record.
Thank you, Madam. May I just add...
did you wish to make a comment on that
again? If I might.
For the record,
we would urge more study as well and urge this to go to a joint committee as well or a task force that's going to look at this issue as we look at the whole issue of how we're going to fund education. But we're here to say for rural students, we've got to protect their buying power as well.
All right. Are there further questions for any of the witnesses, or is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify on this totally non-controversial issue? All right. Seeing none, I think what we'll do is we'll move these. Here would be my suggestion. I don't think we are in a position at this point to say, you know, I like, what is it, 214, 114? pardon me, 1412. 1412 better than 1413 or any of those kinds of things. What I'd like to suggest is we move each of these over to taxes without recommendation, because I think the whole policy issue is a discussion that should be had in taxes. And then, you know, if they were to decide to go forward with one of these, obviously it will be coming back to education, and then we will decide whether this is something that we want to put in a bill and pay for, because there will obviously be some ramifications for that. So I would suggest that we take these one at a time. Representative Demmer, would you like to move your bill? Renew your motion, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will remove my renew my motion that House File 1412 be passed without recommendation and be referred to the taxes.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The bill passes on. I will move House File 1413 be sent on to taxes with no particular recommendation. And all those, are there any comments on any of these? Anybody want to argue this point at all? All right, hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 1413 also goes forward. And then 1414, which is another little variation on this whole theme. The hybrid, as we lovingly refer to it. I would move House File 1414 be re-referred to taxes without recommendation. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And, you know, if you like, we could also add a little recommendation that maybe there be a joint task force that would look at this issue in the interim. So if that is something you would like to do, would somebody like to so move?
So moved.
Representative Greiling moves that we would have a little interim task force that would look at some of these issues. I think that would be good for education. We would better understand the tax ramifications of anything that we did here, and they might better understand what some of the policies they do or that they pass, the differences they make to what happens with referendums and bond issues and funding of schools. So all those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, you have exactly 10 minutes. Oh, we have minutes. Maybe you only have 9.5.
Can I use those minutes?
Yes, you may. I have the Senate representative to have me, especially if you don't move your position. Are there any additions or corrections?
Yes,
Representative Meekin.
I was wondering, could I amend the minutes where it says members absent, if it could say excused for me? I was in another committee at the same time this one was meeting.
Did you ever notify us or check in or anything?
I tried to check in, but you were done by the time I checked in. So, but I was in another committee the whole time. So.
All right. In the future, though, we will do that for Representative Eakin today. But, you know, if you don't think you're going to make it, let us know and let us know where you are or something. And because if you don't show up, and you don't check, you're marked absent. And that's the way it has always been and forever shall be, with the exception of one for Mr. Eakin. You owe me big time, Representative Eakin. Meeting is adjourned.